Welcome to the In the Moment podcast. I'm Lori Walsh. We begin our program with an acknowledgement. Every conversation you'll hear on this podcast was recorded on Lakota, Dakota, or Nakota ancestral land, and we honor the people who have had the longest relationship with this land. This place is home to a thriving contemporary Indigenous art scene. As South Dakota recognizes Native American Day, we spend time in conversation with a few of those artists. Let's get started with Moment in Sound featuring the Wake Singers. For Michael Tubols and members of the Wake Singers, close quarantining, working on new music, playing concerts in the basement, and even participating in an online benefit concert have kept the band focused and moving forward during this time of disruption. We welcomed Michael Tubols of the Wake Singers to talk about how things changed for the band once the pandemic started.
Welcome back to In the Moment, Michael.
Hello, thank you.
So I've been kind of vibing to some of these songs that you sent along all this morning, and I want to jump right in to our first song of the day called Keeping of the Ghost. But before we start that song, is this an older song, one of your newer songs?
Yeah, actually, it's a brand new song. We just finished recording maybe a week ago. Yep.
Awesome. So here's a brand new one from the Wake Singers called Keeping of the Ghost.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about that new song.
Sure. That one is actually a song written for a new show curated by Cairns, Center of American Indian Art, Research Center. Dr. Craig Howe is putting on a show all about seven sacred rites of the Lakota. And so in this particular song, he invited us to write specifically about keeping of the ghost or the spirit. Mm. So when we took it, we decided to write the song in perspective of a ghost or a spirit. So that one was pretty tough one to write, actually.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about that process. This is kind of an important project representing these very spiritual practices. What was that process like?
Well, in the past, we collaborated with Dr. Howe. In the past 4 years, I believe, I think this is fifth show that he invited recording artists to participate. So usually when we take the subject matter that he has, and this one in particular was very close to us. So actually this one took maybe, I want to say, about a month to write, because lyrically, you know, it was just so tough.
Yeah.
The subject matter. So we took the subject and decided to take another look at it and kind of examine it more. But yeah, it was a tough one. Definitely.
Wow. We've got another song that we want to play now. This one is called Loss. That's Lost by The Wake Singers. Michael Tubles, is this another new one for us?
Yeah, that was a written around the same time as this last one, the last month here we recorded.
Talk to us about keeping up with new music and keeping the music going during the pandemic.
Well, quite naturally, I think for us, we also run a press, a studio art workshop. So, you know, I think before these COVID times, we've been kind of doing the same thing, to be honest, recording intensively and creating art. So, you know, to do this, it was even more of a hyper focus, I believe, for these new songs.
Right. I've seen you've done some social media concerts and things like that. Was that something you had done before?
No, that's a new endeavor. And it's been quite challenging, you know, kind of navigating that actually. So yesterday we played a festival, online festival. I think there was something like 20 acts. So it was for a benefit concert for COVID relief, actually. So it's kind of interesting. We're kind of navigating that still, actually trying to get our sound perfected through, you know, social media and streaming. So that's been fun, challenging.
And I know the Wake Singers are also participating in another benefit concert for a restaurant in Minneapolis. Tell us a little bit about that one.
So Reed couldn't join us today, but our singer, cousin Reed Tubles, is actually from Minneapolis, Twin Cities area. And the neighborhood that she lives in is actually right off of Lake Street, where all the protests are happening right now. Mm-hmm. So that's her neighborhood, you know, it's her hood, seeing that. And I think processing that, going through that, has been challenging. So there's a local restaurant, Gandhi Mahal, that actually my uncle also works very close with in that community that got burned down recently because of the protests. And it's also, I want to add that it's very important to, that they made a very strong statement about the protests, supporting the protesters, and saying that, yeah, our business has burned down, but we 100% support the protesters, and that because it burned, it burned for a reason. And so we decided to make a benefit show and inviting a lot of local artists here and in Minneapolis to stream and raise funds for them.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to paraphrase a little bit, but I saw in an article that the owner of that restaurant saying, "Let my building burn, justice needs to be served." And that's a, like you said, a really strong statement.
Yeah, and you know that Reed actually worked at that restaurant for a while, so it was a very dear, you know, close relationship with the family, Gandhi Mahal. I've been there so many times as well, and yeah, it was a powerful statement.
Yeah,
inspiring.
Remind us where folks can check out that benefit show.
So we're organizing it right now. I think our tentative plan is to maybe do it at the end of this month right away. So it's coming up here. You could follow us on our Instagram. It's just at the Wake Singers, and you know, we have a lot of information about it coming up. So.
We're going to play another song now, this one called Master of Your Own Age.
Thank you.
on the lips you terrorize in your own eyes. You turn it off in your own mind. TikTok street talking low rise with an old eye. You think this town is crazy. Billboards, high heels, and Adderall. You get down it all. The only way you know it's okay. You don't know what you want till it's in your disguise. You don't know what. Compress, you satirize what you mesmerize. You say you're not alone. Yeah. Buy more, do more, suit yourself. You said to sell. You need a fix to fix what you sold. Lipstick, purse, scripts, and floral paints with no rain. There's no time for your. What falls like shadow is paradise. Polarized all the way into your vibes. You don't know what you want till it's in your disguise. You don't know what you want till it's on. By large, good God's gray gun in the silent sun. You know you wore your lipstick over it. Smoking gun intent, tinfoil, and it's alright. You are the master of your own age.
That was Master of Your Own Age by the Wake Singers. Band member Michael Tubal is with us now. Michael, tell us about what we just heard.
Yeah, that song, Master of Your Own Age, my cousin Douglas wrote lyrically, and we all collaborated musically. So that was actually an older song. That's the second version. So we recorded another version of it, and we thought it was, when we that it was so, like, different playing it live, we decided to reapproach it and kind of re-examine it a little more.
Yeah. Well, what did you find changed between the first version and this second re-record?
Well, originally, the Wake Singers was primarily a recording band, meaning we never really played live at all. Mm. We just loved to record constantly, and that was our medium. And quite recently in the past year, we've been playing live a lot more. So once you play those songs live and you work, it feels like you're workshopping it with a live audience. So quite often the songs morph and change, and you figure new things about, you know, discover new things about it. And so once we discovered these new things, we re-recorded it.
What drove that shift from being mostly a recording band to doing more live shows?
I think mainly it was our cousin Reed. Primarily before Reed joined, it was Doug who was the singer, and it was him and I doing a lot of recording. So once Reed came out to Rapid to live with us, we decided to just have this focus and attention on live. And, you know, we played in so many live bands through the years, Doug and I, that, you know, it felt comfortable. And also having Reed live with us, it was, you know, every day we're creating. So it became quite natural to become a live band recording act.
I'm going to cue up another song for us here. This one is called Selfie by the Wake Singers.
Keith Braveheart has seen the effects of COVID-19 as an artist and also through the eyes of his art students at Oglala Lakota College. Braveheart is well known for working with young Native artists at USD's annual Oscar Howe Summer Art Institute. During the pandemic, Braveheart has made adjustments to online education as a way to help his students succeed. He has also felt the disappointment of having many art shows and exhibitions canceled or postponed. Keith joined us for this conversation. Keith, welcome back to In the Moment. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to return.
This is such an interesting time to be alive, which might be an understatement, and I'm wondering if it is informing your art and the art of your students as people sort of see the world in new ways and deal with their own isolation. What are you seeing about how it's informing artists in their process in general?
I think that it is indeed a very critical time. And I think a lot of us are engaged with the world more so through technologies, and that's something that's been there, but I think now it's something where it's just another sense of seeing the world and feeling the world. But I think that for artists and for people who are creative, I think that it's really a time to reflect on those critical viewpoints and those moments that could be critical that really lead to some sort of action in the long run. I think that people are very inspired just by, what's going on in the world. You know, maybe I think before these social distancing kind of attributes and things that we are very much necessity now, they were more so as like maybe entertainment or just things that were for simple distraction. Whereas now I think people are looking further and finding these really authentic reflections of the world that they exist within. And for, again, creative artists, that's content. And that's going to lead to some sort of more, I think, uplifted artwork, very, very strong expressions. But it's not also limited to just only creatives or artists. I think that just people in general, communities, they're also finding creativity as an outlet to kind of balance out all of this reception to the world that's happening around them, especially through these heightened technologies.
I think it's children's illustrator Mo Willems who said, "The scientists will get us out of this, but it's the artists who will get us through this." And I think that speaks to, you know, your thoughts there on, in some ways, all of us have discovered our own artistic expression. And that's very much part of what you teach in a lot of ways, not only to teach students to become professional artists, but to just teach cultural expression and self-expression and exploration. It's not just that there are some people who are artists and the rest of us aren't, right?
I believe so. I feel like that's a philosophy that I really hold dear, is that art can mean so many different things. And when you allow conversation to develop, you can make time to listen to others and maybe encourage through that listening, and then maybe start to kind of build words that can start to enhance that encouragement so that others may start to look at the world differently and really start to challenge their perceptions or assumptions of what is art. And I mean, there is a field of art, there is a context of art history, and there's different spheres within art, but I think that expression is something that's just natural to every person. You know, we're all born with this urgency to be expressive. When we're little kids, we pick up something to make a mark with, or we start banging on pots and start singing, things like that. It's not until much later on in life where we kind of get a little bit more broken from that natural way of just being a person. And I think that we can return to that later. And I think people still hold on to these different kind of outlets that are very creative and very positive and very, I think, expressive. But we just maybe not making time to have a really critical moment to see, is this art, you know? And in a way, it's really about humanities. You know, you're making time to look at other perspectives and really try to welcome others into your space and into your life, I guess.
Yeah. You help students at Oglala Lakota College, at the Oscar Howe Summer Art Institute at USD, at Racing Magpie, at other, you know, workshops and community events. Do you see people come up against those obstacles of confidence or doubt or technique or skill, or what are some of the obstacles you see people face, young artists that you're working with as a guide or a mentor or a teacher, and how do you help them get past them?
Yeah, thank you for bringing up all of those organizations and They're very great relatives to work with. I do have a lot of appreciation for USD and the Oscar Halsamer Art Institute, which has its legacy there, plus my new institute of the Ogallala Lakota College, but also Racing Magpie, who are doing just great work out here in our western South Dakota area. But when I work with anybody, but primarily when I'm working with youth, I feel like it's really about making time to just encourage. And I think that as artists, we're more so trained in observational skills. We have really kind of honed in on seeing something or even looking beyond the normal, the overlooked, even listening. We are trained in active listening where we can listen to something and we can find a muse within it. And I think that when we apply that to individuals and to our students, you know, our community, we really start to see that there's a lot more out there. And I think that that's something that's really exciting for me as an artist at this point in my career, because I love the unpredictability of that. I love to see what might happen and also be challenged by what I didn't expect. And really, I think just embrace that there's so much diversity when we start to open up this conversation about what can art be and how is it so unique to our, you know, our communities, you know, our relatives, our homelands, all of that stuff brings so much unique beauty. And that can't be recreated. And I think that that's what stands out within our region of the Northern Plains. But to me, it just always comes back to just making time to remember that I appreciate art. I see myself as somebody who appreciates viewing art first before making it. So if that lets me kind of distance myself from my ego of being an artist, that's great, because I can make time to sit there and appreciate a young artist who's up and coming, or somebody who might not have the courage yet to call themselves an artist in their first attempt, and then just really try to help build that self-esteem, confidence that they can go further beyond, or maybe start to open up their possibilities to engage with more critical type of conversations or opportunities.
I think that's huge, just going back to that that love of art, that appreciation of art, and expanding how you think about it. That's wise advice that anybody can put in their pocket if they're feeling frustrated or stuck. It's a difficult time to market and sell art, to collect art. There's the shows that we normally have that we look forward to, the travel for those shows, many are canceled or postponed. Is the Red Cloud show going forward in June in Pine Ridge, though?
Yes, it is. And I believe that may be one of the only, if not the only, show that I'm aware of that is still moving forward. And I know that they've adjusted their platform, and it's going to be really more safe social distancing protocols. But I know that I've took my work over there, and I thought of it as really a good opportunity to further that encouragement. You really want to support the arts now, and I think in this particular time, more so than maybe in the past. And then really kind of, for me, I believe getting past beyond just only the market aspect of it, to really just say that, you know, here's what I can contribute. And I know that this is something that is very special and dear to me. And I want to give it to you as best as I can, in the hopes of trying to support this effort and just this synergy that we're all coming together to do this, you know, for the love of it. But I do hope that other artists are very successful. I do hope that there's a lot of support that comes within just financially helping artists out in this time. Since, I mean, the statistics are out there, and how many artists are affected by this pandemic, and how many have relied on these sources of income, and now they're taking a big loss. So just to listeners who may be listening, I think that it's really something to just put out there as a nice word to think about how you might be supportive to artists. And maybe it's not always buying artwork, but maybe it's also just making time to have some sort of conversation. I think now is a good time for a conversation as well.
You can find Keith Braveheart's art online as well at keithbraveheart.com. He's just one of my favorite artists, Keith, to talk to, and the work that you're doing. And one of the exciting things about living in South Dakota right now and seeing that the work you do and so with so many other artists is just the influence that you have as well. And it's really it's an honor to watch that unfold and sort of see that spread as well. Every time we talk to you, it's a delight. Keith, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
No, thank you very much. I really appreciate all those kind words and just all the work that you guys do as well, too. So thank you very much.
You look good when you take your selfie. You said you found my energy funny. Looking on and on and on into your eyes. You said you were dissociated.
Joy Harjo, the 23rd Poet Laureate of the United States, came to South Dakota for a book discussion and poetry reading at the Oscar Larson Performing Arts Center on the campus of South Dakota State University. Joy Harjo is the author of 8 books of poetry and a memoir, Crazy Brave. Her many honors include a Guggenheim Fellowship, the Jackson Poetry Prize, the American Indian Distinguished Achievement in the Arts Award, and a Lifetime Achievement Award from the National Endowment for the Arts. Her latest book of poetry is called An American Sunrise. Joy joined us before last year's visit and the pandemic. Here she is. Joy Harjo, welcome. Thank you for making time for us today.
Yeah, it's good to be talking to you. It's been a long time since I've been to Brookings.
Let's talk about some of your South Dakota connections. Tell me a little bit about how your life is intersected with South Dakota and with people from South Dakota, from the tribes in South Dakota.
Oh, I've been through there several times. Once I was part of a casting crew. I was working on a film for Nebraska Educational TV. And I've been to Yankton many times, Standing Rock. I went there, and I didn't make it up recently. I wasn't able to, but I was up in that community probably in the 70s or early 80s, and you know, just through the years, I've had many, many visits up that way.
You write in Crazy Brave about that time in the 70s where there was really this indigenous artistic renaissance and your connections with so many other artists. Did that period continue? Do you see that is still happening today, sort of that artistic output and celebration of the arts and activism?
I think it's, you know, certainly being at IA and being part of that or watching it happen or being inside it while it was happening, you know, caused a major shift. And I think it's probably connected to all of them. And maybe activism, to be a Native, just to be a Native person is an event of activism, mm-hmm. just our presence here, here in this country.
Tell me, your childhood is spent, you live in this sort, you inhabit this really poetic place, and you tell stories about you know, playing with bees, for example, and not getting stung. There's many examples of how you're in this space that some people wouldn't recognize. How do you look now as an adult back at your childhood and connect that with poetry?
I think as children, well, for one, we're closer to that door of emergence where we came from, and we haven't. We're still connected we realize that we're creative souls, even without, you know, we don't need anyone to tell us. Children are just naturally open and creative. And a lot of times our educational system, you know, we start to shut down. We start to shut down with challenges. You know, if that part of ourselves, if our spirits aren't fed, you know, that kind of creativity can be shut down, especially in a society that doesn't value what it means to be a, you know, creative person, an artist.
Yeah. How has that shown up in your life, people not valuing you as an artist, you as a poet, you as a musician? What does that look like? What has that looked like in your life?
I'd rather look at people who were wonderful and helped out. And it's sometimes it's even just the small things. I was an art student at the University of New Mexico, and I would go into this art supply store. And I remember going in and seeing Pablito Velarde, who was an amazing Pueblo painter. And she looked over at me and gave me a big smile. And it was a welcome, like, yes, you know, here we're Native women. You know, and she was, you know, Native women making art. And it was just like my grandmother and my aunt, who I was so close to. And, you know, small things like that matter. And then I've had some incredible teachers through my life. And I would prefer to think of them and how that, you know, I got help. You know, we all need, it's there, and it's often in those small moments of saying, you know, affirming someone's existence or their gift, whether they're a child or, you know, someone older.
And you're that person who does that for so many others now, especially in this new platform as U.S. Poet Laureate. Are you recognizing those people that, you know, you can tell when you meet them just by the looks on their face that that you are opening that door for them, that you are affirming for them, their own poetry, their own value, their own expression?
Well, that's the gift of this position, because, you know, positions also, it's an honor, and there's a lot of responsibility. But the gift of it is that just coming in at this time, you know, as a Native woman, as a poet, in a time like this where there's a lot of, you know, the country is split and, you know, it's a broken heart, essentially, that stepping into the position at this time, you know, it's a doorway. And in that doorway, there's not going to be any fixing of that broken heart until all the stories, you know, of the people of this country are acknowledged. And, you know, and poetry can do that. Poetry is a way to speak beyond words. And so I think of all the Native poets, a lot of people will say they've never even known there was a Native poet. And what this position says is, yes, there are Native, you know, there are Native poets. Yes, we're human beings. It really does come down to that level. And yes, we write poems. And it's not just me. We have hundreds of Native poets, very young and older than me.
And it says something, you know, people have commented on what it says at this particular day and age in American history, that they chose you, that they chose a Native American poet, that at a time when there is brokenheartedness, that they said, this is who we need right now, this voice. Turn your ears in this direction, please. What do you sort of see your role as during your tenure? You know, what do you have in mind?
Well, I'm a poetry ambassador for everyone, or for the poetry, for the art of poetry.
Yeah.
But what's important is that the country see how we're connected, Native poets, that there are it's important that they know that we're all still here. There's over 500-something federally recognized tribal nations, and that there are many poets. There are many who practice this art, who listen. Poetry is an art that we all need it. We can all use it. So at the next fall, I have I've helped edit, along with many, many of our best Native poets, an anthology, a Norton anthology of poetry, of Native poetry. It's historic, you know, from the older oldest poems we could find, in mostly in English, some in our native languages, to the most recent youngest poets. And so that's, you know, that's going to be part of it, you know, to show that, you know, we all, you know, we're also part of this whole story, this story of poetry, the American story of poetry, just like we're essential to the American story, you know, of history, of what this country is.
What are some of the early representations of poetry? Are they all tied to music and song and prayer? What are you finding some of those early representations are?
Well, the earliest I think the earliest one we have is from the Kumulipo, which is a Hawaiian, I think it's like the Hawaiian creation story, some beautiful poetry from that. And most, I think it's not just indigenous poetry, but I think most poetry of the world is not written down.
Right.
When I went to look for poetry after I'd studied poetry and read poetry in books mainly, is that most of our poetry is, you know, we sing it and we speak it. There's some incredible, very Muscogee-type speech-making that goes on in the circle that is sheer poetry, and it's a whole different art. It's an art form. And so we have examples of some of those earliest poems, and then the earliest poem in English we have is by a young Native man who passed really young. His name was Eliezer. And we don't know his tribal affiliation. And he was published by Cotton Mather, of all people. And I think the youngest poet is a young Diné or Navajo poet, Jake Skeets, who has a new book out, just out.
Right. Fascinating. You mentioned music, and music is such a part of your life. Will you tell us a little bit about, as a child, finding music for the first time, because it's such a, it's such an important formative story that I think a lot of people who follow your work know, but people who maybe don't know you, what's one of your earliest memories of experiencing and discovering jazz and music?
Yes, that moment. Yeah, it was back when there were, this will tell how old I am, when there were no seatbelts.
Right.
So my favorite place in the car, my dad always had a really nice car. He used his Indian oil royalty money to upgrade his cars. So I think it was a black Cadillac. And I remember standing behind him and smelling Old Spice, and I love the radio. And I was probably, I would guess I was about 3 years old, maybe three, four years old. And the radio was on, and I heard this sound. I realized it was Miles Davis' trumpet. And I went into this space, you could call it an intuitive kind of space, but I went into this space where I experienced everything in that moment. It's like where I kind of walked through time, and I could see my parents from a distance as if I were much older. And it was just a moment of having compassion for that moment, and hearing, and my ears opening or being opened by the sound of that Miles's horn.
And you write about this sort of this bending of time, and this the way time is folded, also in American Sunrise and some of the poetry there. Riding in your car on the road to Atlanta, now you're an adult, you're driving, and you have this other sort of time-bending moment where things that happened in the past are happening right now. Do you think poetry keeps you connected to those kinds of experiences?
I think so, because to become an artist, anyone who's practicing their art, you go into that, you're quiet. What happens in the quiet? Well, you're no longer, just hearing the sound of your voice yammering, but the quiet opens many, many doors into imagination, into the ancestral zone, into the place where the plant, you can hear the plants and the stones, and, that's, artists create out of that kind of space. We all need it. And it's less and less these days when everyone is you know, has constant access to 24 access to, you know, anything you can find on the internet. It's cut out a lot of that creative, that listening time, so that we learn not to listen, not just to each other, but not even to ourselves.
Is everyone in that sense a poet, or is there room for people who don't see them? How do you sort of, you know, the age-old question of, you know, can anyone write poetry? Can anyone connect with poetry? Who's poetry for? How do you sort of view, that kind of big picture question about poetry?
You don't have to be a poet to write poetry. It's a useful tool. It's a useful tool for getting to know, you know, what's going on, how it is moving, you know, there's something very satisfying to be able to either move, you know, move your body to music, or move your mind, or move your words to a kind of word music, or to an image, you know, paint something with images with a poem, or move towards a kind of knowing that wasn't there when you started writing with your pen or pencil or on the computer. And, you know, we go to poetry, we come to poetry for understanding, for point, you know, places of transformation, like birth, death, you know, falling in love. There's more songs devoted to that, or falling out of love, I think, than any other kind of poetry, any other kind of poem, marriage. You know, any of those points where we witness something that terrifies us or gives us awe, great awe, or even small momentarily awe, you know, awe. Like, it's a useful and incredible tool.
An American Sunrise is described sometimes partially as a dialogue with history, as you revisit some of these places where people were forced to leave everything behind, and yet you also evoke a strong sense of present, of being, you know, people who are currently being forced to leave a place they love behind. How do you see that connection? Talk a little bit about that, if you will. The Trail of Tears and the current, you know, migration and challenges people are facing today.
Yeah, I start the book with a quote by one of the survivors of the Trail of Tears, who says, when we basically, you know, when we made it to India Territory, or what's now Oklahoma, they killed all of our babies. And it's a terrifying thought to lose all of our children for anyone. And I think about the border. I think about how a lot of what's going on politically in this country was the same thing going on during the time of Andrew Jackson. Mm-hmm. And it's a very similar kind of time, you know, and Andrew Jackson illegally forced our removal of many, many tribal groups in the Southeast and around the country, too, not just in the Southeast, out of their homelands. And it's similar. There's a similar thing going on at the border, because for the most part, those are indigenous peoples. And there are old migration routes, but, you know, universal law, you know, states, and it's built into every cell of our hearts, is that you do not bring harm. You do not harm children. You do not bring intentional harm to children and families. And that's what's being done in our name here in this country. And that's what was done in the name of the country, you know, during removal, where our children were either, you know, killed on the Trail of Tears or taken away to be raised without their families, without their languages, without their home, without, you know, to break the heart, to break up a people.
As part of that
story of people.
As part of that conversation, do you feel sometimes poetry is the best way to address that, part of a larger tapestry, inadequate to address something? Like, what do you have a sense of how poetry intersects with meaning during such challenging historical times?
There's many ways. Not one art or not one form cannot address everything. We need, you know, all the different arts, all the different ways of expressing ourselves, you know, towards a compassionate world. And poetry is part of that. Poetry is one of the tools. There are many tools.
You mentioned one of the things that really struck me about Crazy Brave, the memoir, was this, what you call the knowing that has served you throughout your life. I guess I would have called it intuition if I was talking about myself. But you have this sort of deeper sense of the knowing and sort of being in tune. To tell us a little bit about what you mean when you say that, and how you can tap into that knowing to help find direction in your own life.
Yeah, I tried to find a way to talk about that in Crazy Brave, because it's something that is inborn with everyone.
Yeah.
And it's that, you know, we're living in a, you look around in the space, there's what's in the, it's like there's all kinds of space, there's all kinds of frequencies. And I guess for me, the knowing, it came, you know, at a very young age. Even as a little child, I liked the company in that kind of space. I liked being in that kind of space. And I liked a lot of time. I still do. I like a lot of time alone to be in that. And I think every human being needs, you know, that ultimately it's about knowing yourself, which is about, you know, knowing the world. If you don't understand yourself, you're not going to be able to connect to anyone else either.
South Dakota was the first state to officially celebrate Native American Day. The South Dakota State Legislature established Native American Day at the urging of Governor George Mikkelsen in partnership with leaders like Tim Gallego. Mikkelsen declared 1990 as a year of reconciliation and called for the first Native American Day observance to be held at Crazy Horse Memorial, where the likeness of the Lakota leader is being carved into the mountain. For most of us, 2020 has also been a year of reconciliation, or at least of reckoning. People are thinking more deeply about racism, privilege, our relationship with the planet. Artists, poets, musicians, and dancers use their art and their voices to open doors, to show us who we are, to show us who we might become. As you listen to the music of the Wake Singers, experience the visual art of Keith Braveheart, or explore the poetry of Joy Harjo, you might be challenged or comforted. We invite you, at the very least, to be inspired, to support Indigenous artists, to create art of your own, to live more artfully in a world much in need of creative solutions and artistic expression.
This town is crazy. Billboards, high heels, and Adderall, you're down it all. The only way you know it's okay, you don't know what you want till it's in your sun, you know you wore your lipstick over it. smoking gun and tinfoil, and it's alright, you are the master of your own age.